From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Stephen Quayle joins us. Dead scientists, the swine flu, and giants on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines this hour. I'll give you the numbers in just a moment. Hundreds of Americans in eight cities are lining up for experimental flu shots in a race to get a vaccine out in case the new flu virus, they say, regains strength this fall and winter. Sharon Fry, she's a leading government-funded tester at St. Louis University, said scientists have been working late nights and weekends to organize the studies and recruit volunteers. Now, about 2,800 people will participate in the government-led studies. St. Louis University will test 200 adults and 200 children. Also underway are separate studies by five flu vaccine manufacturers under contract with the government. Now, listen to this. Health officials expect to have about 160 million doses available this fall, with the first batch sometime in September. The studies will test the safety and effectiveness of vaccines developed by drug makers and help determine dosage and whether it can be given with a seasonal flu shot. Man, here's some of the cities: Seattle, Iowa, Maryland, Cincinnati, St. Louis, some areas of Texas as well. As we reported weeks ago regarding the swine flu and the use of troops by FEMA, some people said, come on, this is not true. Well, listen to this. A proposal awaiting Defense Secretary Robert Gates' approval would allow the military to set up regional teams to assist civilian authorities in dealing with the impact of the swine flu pandemic. Some observers say that this level of government preparedness is little more than a pretext for tyranny. The Daily Telegraph, by the way, in Britain, says that Britain's government has emergency plans for mass graves, inflatable mortuaries, 24-hour cremations, and express funerals. It's really getting out of hand. A powerful earthquake with a preliminary magnitude of 6.6 hit Tokyo in nearby areas shortly after dawn Tuesday, halting trains, forcing two nuclear reactors to be shut down for safety checks. The U.S. Geological Survey also said another unrelated quake with a 7.6 magnitude hit the Indian Ocean about 160 miles north of India. A tsunami watch was called for India, Myanmar, Indonesia, Thailand, Bangladesh, but was later canceled. No tsunami there. And in Taiwan, a mudslide touched off by a deadly typhoon buried a remote mountain village, leaving at least 400 people unaccounted for and military rescue helicopters unable to land because of the slippery ground. They simply dropped food to desperate survivors. Typhoon Morakot slammed Taiwan over the weekend with as much as 80 inches of rain. You know, that would be 800 inches of snow if it was cold. 80 inches of rain, inflicting the worst flooding the island has seen in at least a half a century. Jim Berkland, geologist, on the line with us here. Jim, you and Mitch Batros hit it right on the head on these.
Oh, couldn't miss with that. The eclipse. And we're having extremely high tides coming up at the end of August, and certainly see some more activity. Now, to get two major quakes in just 2 days is pretty unusual, especially this year when we went until March, so we had only five major quakes. Now we've already had six, seven, eight, and nine since May, and the last two in just the last 2 days. That's pretty unusual.
Thank God, Jim. Still haven't had the big one here in North America.
Not yet, but we're watching pretty closely, and of course we have the maximum tides of August coming up here on about the 18th of August. And we'll be watching closely at that period, especially if the animals start really doing weird things as they often have done in the past prior to quakes.
Jim, I got a couple of emails from people who want your newsletter. I don't have your address with me. Would you give it off?
Yes, yeah, sure. P.O. Box 1926 in Glen Ellen. Two words, G-L-A-N-E-L-L-E-N, California. And the zip code is 95442. I'll be happy to send them along a sample copy if they put a couple of dollars in the envelope, and I'll return it to them.
And the website? Spell it.
Yes. Syzygy. S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y. My initials, J-O-B. com.
Great. Thanks, Jim. We look forward to hearing from you on the next earthquake. Can you imagine this? Sitting on a plane for 9 hours. 9 hours on the tarmac, going nowhere, just sitting there. Well, it happened. It was supposed to be a routine flight from Houston to Minneapolis. 47 passengers ended up with this travel nightmare after a storm diverted their jet and the airline forced them to spend the night inside the plane on the tarmac. The Continental Airlines flight left Houston about 9:30 p.m. Friday and was supposed to land in Minneapolis at about midnight. It never did. It had to land in Rochester, Minnesota because of bad weather. And there the plane sat and sat and sat. Passengers weren't allowed into the terminal until dawn. They were furious. To make matters worse, it was one of those small planes where you have one seat on the left and two on the right. Those are little. Well, just like Velikovsky's Worlds in Collision, two distant planets orbiting a young star apparently smashed into each other at high speeds thousands of years ago in a huge cosmic pileup. Telltale plumes of vaporized rock and lava left over from the collision revealed its existence. To NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope, which picked up signatures from the impact and recent observations, the two-planet pileup occurred within the last few thousand years. That's nothing in cosmic time. The smaller of the two bodies, a planet about the size of Earth's moon, according to computer models, was apparently destroyed by the crash. The other was most likely a Mercury-sized planet. It survived. So it does happen, doesn't it? Saturn will make its ring system disappear from our view, poof, on August 11th. Saturn's rings, loaded with ice and mud, boulders, tiny moons, 170,000 miles wide, but the shimmering setup is only about 30 feet thick. That's it. The rings harbor 35 trillion tons of ice, dust, and rock. The rings shine because they reflect sunlight, but every 15 years, the rings turn edge on to the sun and reflect almost no sunlight. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky on the line. This has got to be fascinating for people with telescopes, Stephen.
Well, George, it is, and good morning and good evening to all the listeners of Coast. But the problem is, planet Saturn is now a little too close to the sun for all of us out there that have those types
of... Oh, no, you can't see it.
You can't, but, you know, it's kind of cool because Galileo had this quandary, among many other things that he suffered through his life, about his, of course, belief that the sun, of course, was the center of the entire solar system universe. But one of the more interesting stories is he viewed in his small telescope what he thought were... He thought there were moons on the side of Saturn, but they were actually the rings. He gets the credit with the discovery, but every 15 years, as you said, we, the Earth, pass through that plane. And I'm amazed, George, that figure of 30 feet thick is incredible because we observe the planet Saturn all the time. Many Coast listeners, I'm sure, with telescopes will agree. It's an outstanding sight to see, and darn it, we're going to miss this one because it's a little bit too close to the sun for all of us who love the sky.
But are we going to miss the meteor shower?
George, not at all. And that's the big topic this week because tomorrow night, all the listeners of Coast have a rare opportunity. Look into the northeast sky. We'll be out there and maybe even, who knows, maybe talking about it with you. But sometime, as we hope here in the western United States, across the country, after midnight into Wednesday morning, we may get to see a very intense ribbon of this comet debris slamming into the Earth. Pacific time, that'll occur about, say, 1 a.m. to 2 a.m. But, George, there could be upwards of 200 meteors per hour, even
exciting.
In the bright moonlight.
I got to tell you, Stephen, last month I was driving home from work, wee hours, saw in the Los Angeles skies the longest-lasting meteor I have ever seen. You know how normally they just go,
right,
and they're gone, right?
Wow, you bet.
This thing just, like, kept going, almost like it was some kind of fireworks display, and then it burned out. But it must have lasted 3 seconds, which is a long time.
It's a heck of a long time. And another thing that you're talking about is these meteors from the Perseids. I'll put money on this one, George, for all the listeners of Coast. I predict you're going to see a lot more of those meteors that you talked about. We call them fireballs, and we're watching this and monitoring this nightly. The increase in meteor activity over the last couple of nights is about 20, then maybe 40 meteors per hour. But a lot of reporters, I mean, the people observing around the country are talking about the kind of viewing and meteors that you just described. So even if the moon is out, the moon can't stop this meteor shower, because we'll hopefully get to see some of these bright fireballs. And that, again, is tomorrow night and all into early Wednesday morning. And we'll be out there, George. We're having our own big Perseid party here in Arizona.
I love it. Dr. Sky, of course, also writes for the After Dark magazine. His website, drsky.com. In Florida, authorities say a 34-year-old Southwest Florida man shot a teenager in an apparent road rage incident, and then he killed himself. Pasco sheriff's deputies say the driver got angry when a 17-year-old driver just didn't pull up far enough at a stop sign. He was behind him. The man got out, shot the teenager, hitting him twice in the leg. I don't know how he did that. The shooter then turned the gun on himself, killing himself back in his car. And listen to this one. In England, emergency medical personnel used a Google search to help save the life of a teenager who was held down by a gang of teens while a python was forced to sink its fangs into the kid. A 14-year-old boy was attacked by a group of teens in Bristol, England, sustained two deep puncture wounds after one member of the gang forced this python to bite him. Paramedics identified the type of snake after using a Google search to show internet pictures to the victim, who had his cell phone. The boy was transported to a nearby hospital. He'll be okay. In Belarus, officials say a massive statue of Soviet founder Vladimir Lenin collapsed on a man who was hanging it. He was hanging from it, killing him on the spot. The Emergency Situations Ministry, they have one of those, said that the 21-year-old man was drunk when he climbed onto the 16-foot-high plaster monument, hung from its arm. It broke into pieces and crushed him. And also the story of the moment in the news at coasttocoastam.com. You'll see it down there at the bottom. A Chinese man, with pictures, by the way, says he can't get a girlfriend because much of his body is covered in thick hair. The 23-year-old was born with large birthmarks, which now sprout thick hairs all over his body. He said, "I can't even wear T-shirts or shirts. My hair is so thick and hard it penetrates through the material." His entire back and most of his front are covered with hair. We'll show you some of his body. "The most frustrating thing is no girl wants to keep a relationship with me once they know my secret." I guess you can't hide that. We've got open lines for you. Here are the numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. Here's the wild card line. It's open for you at 818-501-4109. Open lines this hour. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And here we go, and getting us started is Patrick, first-time caller, San Diego, California. Hey, Patrick, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
Just calling up. I was going to comment on what you were saying earlier about the flu vaccine and all of that going around. A few years ago, I was working at a small engine shop, and I was discussing like plastic polymers with a customer that was a regular in there, and I guess he had a buddy who had sold a patent to the government, and it was for, they're making multi-million of these polymer plastic bags. I guess the idea was they're for contaminated materials that they're making body bags out of.
Kind
of weird, with everything going on. And, I don't know, it may all be BS, so, maybe keep our fingers crossed.
Well, we do know that they're preparing. I mean, that's the argument. I'm going to get into this with Stephen Quayle next hour when he becomes our main show guest, and that is, should the government be ready, or is it indeed tyranny? That's a tough question, isn't it? Because we saw what happened with Hurricane Katrina. It was a disaster. The government failed to act, made a huge error there. So maybe they're reacting to things like that. Maybe they're afraid. So instead, they start the other way. They think of the worst-case scenarios, and they prepare for it. So in the event there is, and I don't think so, not by nature at least, a swine flu pandemic, and I say not by nature because you never know if one escapes from a laboratory, right? But if it does happen, and all these people die, what are you going to do with them? So you do have to put them in body bags and put them in mass graves. And what do you do when the population screams up and down, I'm not going to get the vaccine, like I'm not? They're going to take them away. They're going to quarantine them. But it's a tough call. They cross over privacy. Many people would say that. Next up, let's go to Sue in Portland, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Susan.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I have kind of a quandary and a question for you.
What's the quandary first?
Okay, the quandary is that sometimes I psychically pick up on crimes that have happened, and I sort of like see what's happened in the victim's eyes and sometimes get details on what's happened.
That's a gift.
It's a gift, but it becomes a quandary because I would like to be able to share the information with the police, but you know, I don't know whether they've already got me labeled as crazy or not.
Or the suspect, Sue.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I'm not a suspect type. I'm just, it's not in me.
Now, let me ask you, has the crime already happened when you see this, or is it about to happen?
Once it was, well, there were two kids that the mother had thrown across the bridge, and the news on TV had just reported that they had heard screams and the police were being sent out to search. And I picked up on children's voices, and I saw the silhouette of the underneath side of the bridge, and instantly the thought came into my head, it's the family.
Oh, my. Now, did you see anyone? You say that you have to look into their eyes. It doesn't sound like you...
It's like I'm seeing through the victim's eyes.
Even though you're not next to the victim.
Right.
That
incident occurred like 9 or 10 miles away from my home, and I was at home when I picked up on this.
And so have you tried to contact law enforcement about this gift?
No, I haven't. I'm not sure who I could trust and who wouldn't drop it into the old file 13 instead of maybe, even if all they did was put it at the back of a file and then maybe refer to it later if they thought it might provide them something. I would be comfortable with that.
How often does this happen, Sue?
Not real frequently, you know, once every couple of years, once every year.
But when it does...
So far, the only thing I've gotten that wasn't a crime was when the Colorado coal mine collapsed.
Okay, now, when these do occur, how accurate are you? 80%? 90%? 100%? 3%? How accurate?
I would figure maybe 70%, because the one cue that I can't quite sort out is sometimes I see what's happening, and then the scene either goes to dark or goes to a shadow in forest. And I'm not sure if that's giving me a location that a person's going to, or if that's a sign that they're dying and they're about ready to pass through to another life.
All right. Do you also get the location most of the time?
I don't always get an exact location, no.
See, that's the problem, because this is a pretty big planet, Sue.
Yeah,
and if you could pinpoint things a little better, we might be able to help you get these to law enforcement. I'll tell you what I'm going to do, though. I'm going to put you on hold, and I want you to talk to Tom, and you guys are going to share private numbers, and it'll be almost like your hotline to him. And if you get one of these visions, call him and let him know. We'll document it through you that way. And if you have any specific location, we'll let the police department know about it first. We'll do it anonymously without giving your name to start until you start getting accurate. But I got to tell you, in most cases, I think initially law enforcement would probably look at you as a suspect. I talked to a psychic once who was handling a murder case on her own, and she went to police and told them about things that had not been reported in the media. They were the only ones who knew, along with the murderer, of course. And they looked at her and they couldn't believe it. So I think for a while, and she believes, they thought she was the suspect in this crime. And eventually they, you know, understood who she was and they began to trust her. And I think the same thing could happen to you too. So give Tom your phone number and we'll keep it and you'll have one of ours and let's see what you come up with. And like you said, it happens once a year, once every couple of years. It could be a long time from now. Open lines will continue in just a moment. If you need to email me, that's George at Coast2TO, coasttocoastam.com. If you have interesting pictures and things like that, that's Lex at coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Stephen Quayle pops in to join us as we talk about the world economy, the swine flu, the dead microbiologists, sightings of giants, he says, in England, and also a volcano that could go at any time. Let's all jump off the bridge now. Nah, I'm only kidding. I always think it'll get better. But Stephen Quayle joins us next hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We go to Appleton, Wisconsin, east of the Rockies. Kevin, where I'm told your population was 70,000 in the 2000 census. Do you think that's pretty accurate?
I believe it is, somewhere around there.
Probably much higher now. How are you?
I'm good. You?
Good. What's up?
Well, I wanted to ask a question and make a comment about it.
Okay.
And I was wondering about that bombing of the moon and if they're still following through with that or not.
Yeah, it's going to take place around October 9th. And what they're trying to do is they're going to explode a small portion of the moon, hoping that they will toss water vapor up and that the instruments of the craft can pick that up.
Okay. Well, what I wanted to mention, you've probably heard this before, but what the Hopi people said when we landed on the moon the first time, they mentioned that we should have never gone there. The stones and that they took back probably changed the gravitational pull. Science would say it didn't. But we being and on the Earth ruled by the fluids, kind of our bodies being all water, and the gravitational pull has such a impact on us, I believe, especially when you get into spiritual nature of things, that I hope this doesn't happen.
I think you may be right, unfortunately. You know, the Hopi prophecy is pretty uncanny. And some of the things they've talked about don't disrupt things that Mother Nature has created for us. And they were opposed to taking rocks back from the moon, though for science they did what they had to do, of course. But the Hopis believe you're not supposed to do stuff like that. You're not supposed to disrupt the natural flow of things. We are going to do a show on Hopi prophecy because it's time. Next up, we go to Georgia, and it's Ellen on the line. Hey, Ellen, how are you?
Hi, good evening, George.
Good.
You have a wonderful program, and I try to listen every night.
Good for you, and thank you.
I'm not happy with what I'm hearing about this swine flu, and I may have missed a couple of ideas about it, but I'm highly suspicious about this. I'm 71, and I had the Hong Kong flu, and the government didn't make too much of a fuss over that. And through the years, we've had, you know, the flu every year, and no big hullabaloo about it. And all of a sudden, you know, it feels to me as if they're either trying to frighten us to death or they're throwing fairy dust in our eyes while they pull off something else that they don't want us to know about. And I hear the commercials or the PSAs all day. I mean, they are hammering at this.
Yep, you're very perceptive. And I'll tell you what else bothers me. They are rushing this vaccine.
Yes.
They are testing it as we speak.
Yes.
And they're going to come out in the fall with 160 million doses of it?
Yeah.
My God. Now, look, we know what they've done when they've tested drugs for 10 years. They pull them off the market sometimes.
And also, what if people start dying from this testing? And what if they're using something other than the swine flu vaccine and so that people won't die and then they'll bring out the real thing if the swine flu hits?
What if these other 28 people somehow are given something with a vaccine that doesn't work and they then spread some disease all over the place?
Yeah, exactly. And there's something going on. Now, I read a book years ago by a Dr. Golasek, who is with, I believe, North Carolina State, is a professor. And in the back of it was a novel, and in the back of the book was a list of things that the CIA had done, stuff that came from Fort Detrick.
Yep.
And they were, he had the dates and the times and the places where they had sprayed biological stuff that was not very good into the air in strange places like subways and street corners. And I thought, well, how stupid. You know, if you're going to test something, you need to be in a controlled situation where you can see what the outcome is. But they were doing it in New York City on street corners. there's some stuff going on with our government that I'm concerned about, and I think there's something more to this swine flu. I did hear the theory that it was manufactured. Someone said it could not be occur naturally; that it had to be made in a.
It had too many different strains.
Yeah,
had the pig strain, the human virus. They had a bird virus. It was all mixed in. It's too weird.
Yes, it is. So what do you think? You're pretty smart.
Well, I'm not pretty smart. I'm absolutely brilliant. No, I'm kidding.
I'll buy that.
But look, I've said for a long time, I said during the SARS on my shows years gone back that it wasn't going to be a pandemic or an epidemic.
Right.
And I've said the same thing here. I stuck my neck out, Ellen, months ago.
Yes.
And I said, this is not going to be a pandemic. But I did qualify it by saying, it's not going to be a natural pandemic.
Right.
I don't think diseases work that way anymore.
No.
I think if something happens, something either will go awry from a laboratory. They've already admitted, Baxter Labs, that they've been playing around with this stuff and it got mixed in.
Mm-hmm.
But they're either playing around and something gets loose or they let it out on purpose. But I strongly think that whatever it is, they have made it. They've created it.
Yes. And I love this country, but I am scared. I'm worried. And everybody that I know is frightened about this.
Sure. Maybe it got loose. Okay, Ellen? Maybe it got loose and they don't want to tell us, we made this thing or it's loose. They don't want to create a panic.
Right.
So they're doing all this legitimately, but they can't tell us why.
Yeah. I think we've got one screwed up government at the moment.
Well, we've always had screwed up governments.
True.
Not just this time.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Next up, we go to Scott, truck driving in Toledo on Coast to Coast. Hey, Scott, go ahead.
I was wondering if you could ask Mr. Quayle. In 1977, I was stationed in Lackland Air Force Base, and we were hit with a swine flu, and they inoculated us. I mean, I didn't get sick. There was like 30 of us that didn't get sick. And they inoculated us two or three times, and we walked around in kind of a sleep stupor because we were put in charge. There were just a lot of people sick, and they turned the training barracks and stuff into a extended hospital. And I was wondering if you could ask Mr. Quayle about that, because, in 77, this flying flu supposedly hit Lackland Air Force Base, and we lost several people over it.
Oh, yeah, people are going to die, Scott, from the flu. They're going to die from this flu. Keep in mind, though, 36,000 people die in this country every year from the so-called normal flu. 36,000 people in flu-related deaths. That's from the Centers for Disease Control. Those are their statistics. If they announced today 36,000 Americans were going to die from the swine flu, they'd be panicking. But they don't panic when the normal flu does that. Next up, we'll go to Petersburg, Illinois. First-time caller, Dell, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, George. How are you?
Okay.
I had a couple questions. A couple of years ago, they were talking about they thought they'd found some structures in the Gulf of Mexico, and National Geographic was going to put together an expedition and go see what they could find definitely. Whatever became of that?
They have not gone down there. These were structures off the coast of Cuba on the Gulf side, and they're not there. They're not there. They have not gone down. Some people theorize that they were part of the missile silos from the Cuban Missile Crisis and that the Russians had dumped them, the Soviets dumped them into the ocean. But I think they look more like buildings and structures. Our reporter, Linda Moulton Howe, had checked in with the people who were going to go down there and discover it and search for it. But they can't get the funding to do it, and it hasn't happened yet. Now, have our submarines been down there? Maybe. Let's go to Long Beach, California. Anthony, you're on Coast to Coast. Hey, good evening, Anthony.
Hey, good evening, George.
Yeah.
How you doing today?
Good. Not bad.
Awesome. I'm a first-time caller, and I just wanted to speak on the subject about medical marijuana. I heard something about a new law coming out where they're going to be taxing this in Southern California. Have you heard anything about this?
I haven't heard if they're going to start taxing it. I know they would like to legalize it because they need the revenues. Okay. I'm a supporter of medicinal use of marijuana for people after doing a number of interviews with people who cannot take prescription pain pills. And they have, under doctor supervision, tried this, and it has helped them tremendously. I've seen them cry in front of me.
Wow.
There's no reason why we shouldn't allow these people to be able to use this. But in terms of taxing, it wouldn't surprise me, Anthony.
I really think that would help out the state of California tremendously. I mean, I was a medical marijuana patient for about 3 years.
What was your affliction?
Insomnia. I have trouble sleeping, and, you know, I've been using it for a while, and I can't buy it off the streets. You know, there's too many shady people out here in the city of Long Beach, and, you know, it's just a right that I feel that I deserve. You know, I mean, this is, you know, I'm not hurting anyone by doing this. No one's ever OD'd from marijuana. I don't understand why it's still, you know, in the 21st century, still illegal. It makes no sense whatsoever. I really don't get it.
It's probably still illegal because they make too much money on it illegally, if you know what I mean.
Right. Now, I heard something about the medical marijuana clubs. Last year, I heard they made somewhere between $800 million and $2 billion, and that this was just way too big of a gap to not know how much money these cannabis clubs were making, and that I heard that they wanted to try to tax this.
Sure. Well, if they need to make money, they're going to tax it.
No doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, I feel it honestly, everyone, and over here in Southern California, it's just, it's the thing now. You're seeing it on billboard signs. You're seeing, you know, down in Venice Beach, people are handing out these cards. Go, you know, get your prescription. And it's, for me, who's been a medical, you know, who's been a marijuana user for a long time, getting into the whole medical scene was just something that was surreal.
Well, and as you know, Anthony, just recently the feds have made a decision not to raid these places as they were doing about a year or so ago and years gone back. So they basically have taken a hands-off approach to that now. As I said, I've seen people who are in just dire straits. They cannot take pharmaceutical pain pills, nor should they in some cases. And medicinal marijuana works just miracles on them. And, you know, it should be legalized across the board. Now, if they're going to tax it, of course, I fully expect that. Look what they do with gasoline and tobacco and everything else. Mark in Greenwood, Indiana, you are east of the Rockies, and you are on.
Thank you for taking
sure
my call.
Sure thing.
The last time I talked to you was on Halloween night of all nights.
It's almost that time again.
Yes. How time flies when we get older.
Too fast. Don't remind me.
But that's another subject matter for another day. If we knew that, we could all be rich. But about 6 weeks ago, I was where I'm working at. I was training this guy. He had as a telemarketer, this, that, and the other. And I told him from time to time, you know, I'd pick up on people and knew things was going to happen. He kind of looked at me. He's, well, that he was going to go a little bit northwest where I live, and he was going to go to this train trellis. And all of a sudden, I just kind of looked at him. He's, well, I have photography stuff that can pick up on images and this, that, and the other. Plus, I also have the tape recording stuff. Looked at him. I said, was there someone hung there? And his chin dropped. Yeah, how'd you know?
How did you know?
I had no clue. None whatsoever.
I just had this feeling.
And I said, I don't know you. I've seen you here for a few days. And I said, when you're looking at this one side of the train trellis, there's a barn or a house to the left side of it, and there's some shrubs to the right of it, and there's a fence row, then about 50, 75 yards to the right of it, there's a big old oak tree that's been there about probably 50, 75 years. And I said, what's red? He said, there is a tree to the right of it about 75 yards. There is a brush pile to the right of it along the fence row. The train trellis is red, and there is a house to the left side of it.
You're good.
And he kind of looked at me and I said, oh, you'll also see a woman. There'll be a woman around there. So about a week ago, he came by. He said, oh, by the way, you ought to do this professionally, because he said, there was a guy that was hung there, and he picked him up. And I said, was his name this? And he said, yeah.
You mean you even had the name?
I had the name. I said, it's either Mike or Bill. His name was Bill. And he looked at me, and I said, was there a lady there? He said, yes, she was also hung. He said, they hung him from over the road. She was up on the train trellis. And he heard the creaking noise.
Have you done this before?
Never done it before.
First time.
And he kind of looked at me. He said, I don't even know you. And he said, you're starting to freak me out. I said, I've done it for people before, you know, just picked up on people. I said, well, don't do this, or you should do this. But I said, but, you know, the last time I was out in that area was probably about 20, 25 years ago. I don't even know whereabouts, you know, you're talking about, but I know where the town is.
But why only this one time, Mark? I should be able to do this all the time now.
And, well, what was funny, this one lady, she came up to me where I work, and I said, you're not feeling well, are you? And she said, no, how'd you know? I said, you better go get checked. I think you may have walking pneumonia.
Whoa.
She said, yeah, right. I said, if I'm wrong, I'll pay your doctor bill. She said, okay, you're on. So she went to the emergency room. Come to find out, she had walking pneumonia.
We got to tap into you, my friend, as a resource.
And she kind of looked at me. She said, what else do you know? And I said, there's a guy that's probably about 5'7", 5'8", that you dated probably a couple years ago that you did not like. He kind of freaked you out because he liked to stalk you. She said, get away from me. And she said, yes. And come to find out, he took his own life.
Now, do you ever get what I would call worldwide impressions? Big stuff?
Well, what was funny, I have an aunt that lives in Germany, and I went over back in 82 when it was still East and West.
Yeah.
And I was talking to one of her nephews that spoke broken English, and I said, asking if they know the wall is coming down. She looked at me, she said, what are you talking about? I said, the Berlin Wall. When is it coming down? This was back in 82. She said, well, I don't think. She asked him. He said, I doubt it very seriously, but he said, maybe long time down the road. And I knew somehow that wall was coming down.
You felt it?
Yes.
You felt it. Hey, you've got a gift. You got to use it. Keep in touch with us, Mark. Let's go to Ruth in San Antonio, Texas, first-time caller. Ruth, I've only got about a minute and a half for you. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to tell you that in 1960, I was 12 years old at the University of Illinois, and my parents decided to give my sister, have us get the experimental flu vaccine that was being given out, and it almost killed us.
Both of you?
Yes. We almost had to be hospitalized. And I think part of this government thing, this all speaks of panic, that we need to, like the Hopis, just, you know, work on building your nutrition and that sort of thing.
You have to do that. So I take it you're not going to get this vaccine, are you?
No, I won't. The thing is to eat healthy, eat right, and don't panic, and it'll be okay. The idea of this other is ridiculous. And then one final thing, I know that I dream in color because of the last large tsunami they had over in India, Indian Ocean.
Yep.
I had a dream, and I dream I saw the tectate plate start to split open and red came up. And when they showed it on the news, I looked at it. I said, that's not the way it was. They missed this part of the rocks. And my son said, you're crazy, Mom. And then a day later, he came down and said, Mom, I just dreamed that I was in a big building with a swimmer suit on going down to lower floors to save people. So I guess we could be considered animals that were picking up. But,
well, you're pretty good, too. And we must have some of the most psychically inclined people I have ever, ever heard from. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen Quayle, our main guest, so get ready.